Gamma says GA sales continue strong despite economic challenges. Embraer's second Phenom 300 makes its first flight. And the FAA updates the Eclipse 500's airworthiness directive. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, August 8, 2008. On Thursday, the General Aviation Manufacturers Association announced second quarter shipments and billing continued at a record-setting pace. Manufacturers reported $12.1 billion in billing, up 24.1% in the first half of 2008. Gamma President and CEO Pete Bunce credited expanding worldwide markets. Quote, "Shipments in the business jet and turboprop segments continue to rise steadily," unquote. Turboprop shipments increased from 186 units in the first half of last year to 222 this year. Business jet shipments jumped more than 39% from 476 to 663. Conversely, piston aircraft shipments dropped more than 15% from 1,226 to 1,034. Despite that downtrend, Bunce expressed faith in sustained enthusiasm for the light end of the market, based in part on what he saw at Oshkosh. Quote, "Our piston manufacturers continue to generate excitement through new product introductions that incorporate innovative technologies and are paying increased attention to growth opportunities in the international market," unquote. Right on schedule, Brazilian plane maker Embraer saw its second Phenom 300 light jet take flight on Tuesday, departing from Embraer's test runway at the Gavião Peixoto factory. Enrique Langenegger, Embraer Vice President for Executive Jet Programs, commented, quote, "The Phenom 300 program is steadily moving forward. The first and second aircraft are key pieces for the certification campaign. The qualification of our engineering teams, combined with the extensive use of technology, will certainly sustain the program's firm progress," unquote. As ANN reported, the first Phenom 300 flew in late April. That airframe concluded the ground vibration test in early June. Based on those results, the aircraft is going through performance checks in order to define the final aerodynamic configuration. In the meantime, the third and fourth Phenom 300s are in the assembly and pre-assembly stages. The fleet of four aircraft will perform certification and maturity campaigns. The FAA has issued an updated airworthiness directive for the Eclipse 500 fleet regarding throttle quadrants. Under Thursday's new AD, Eclipse 500 aircraft tested under the June 12th AD must complete Eclipse's FAA-approved throttle quadrant testing process during their next scheduled aircraft maintenance visits, or within the next 60 days. Aircraft that were not previously inspected must be tested under the new AD within 30 days. The new directive also allows the aircraft owner up to 10 hours of flight time to reposition the airplane for the inspection. Eclipse has created a special suite of tools to efficiently conduct these tests at Eclipse service centers or Eclipse-designated facilities. If the TQA fails the inspection, the quadrant must be replaced before the next flight, grounding the aircraft until the new part is installed. Eclipse recently announced its plan to increase the throttle's range limit to prevent the fault condition through a software update to all Eclipse 500 owners and operators, and says it expects FAA certification on the software update early in the fourth quarter. Elon Musk, CEO and founder of Space Exploration Technologies, aka SpaceX, briefed employees Wednesday on the company's unsuccessful Falcon 1 launch this past weekend. The rocket and its three satellites were destroyed after an unsuccessful stage separation, and Musk says four separate analysis methods agree on why it happened. Musk blames a difference in the new Merlin 1C engine compared to the previous 1A design. This difference allowed unburned fuel in the cooling channels and manifold to produce a small amount of thrust, which resisted the stage separation pusher impulse. So why didn't they catch it in testing? Musk explained, quote, "Unfortunately, the engine chamber pressure is so low for this transient thrust, only about 10 psi, that it barely registered on our ground test stand in Texas, where ambient pressure is 14.5 psi. However, in vacuum, that 10 psi chamber pressure produced enough thrust to cause the first stage to recontact the second stage," unquote. Always looking for that silver lining, Musk pointed out things could have been worse. The problem could have been first noticed in a launch of the much larger Falcon 9 launch vehicle. He remains optimistic, noting significant improvements have addressed the fuel slosh issues which caused a failure in Flight 2. Quote, "It looks like we may have Flight 4 on the launch pad, as soon as next month, unquote. Up next on ANN, the EU signs off on the Delta-Northwest merger. Unions lick their chops at the thought of organizing all those new Delta workers. And U.S. Airways CEO Doug Parker defends all those extra charges. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways, and you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for August 8, 2008. I'm Paul Plagg. Delta Airlines has knocked off one more checklist item in its preparations to acquire Northwest Airlines. The Wall Street Journal reports antitrust regulators in the European Union signed off on the deal Wednesday, saying the merger offers few threats to competition within the 27-member bloc or on transatlantic routes. The European Commission noted that both airlines are already members of SkyTeam, one of three major international airline alliances, and their routes and schedules across the Atlantic, quote, are mainly complementary as they have hubs in different U.S. cities, unquote. Delta currently serves twice as many EU cities as Northwest does. Delta has hubs in Atlanta, New York, Cincinnati, and Salt Lake City, while Northwest's are located in Minneapolis, Detroit, Memphis, and Tokyo. The all-stock acquisition still faces a few more hurdles. Both airlines' stockholders will be asked to approve the deal next month. The U.S. Department of Justice made a second request for information and is sifting through the thousands of documents it received as a result. Most airline industry and antitrust experts expect eventual DOJ approval. Delta CEO Richard Anderson issued a statement Wednesday saying the airlines, quote, remain confident that we will be able to finalize the merger by the end of the year, unquote. Whenever that merger does happen, expect union organizers to have a very busy week. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution reports the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers recently opened an office across the street from Delta's headquarters near Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport with an eye toward unionizing Delta's largely non-union workforce as soon as the merger goes through. IAM members are already handing out flyers to Delta employees as they arrive at work. And they're not alone. The Association of Flight Attendants is also working closely with employees at both airlines in an attempt to unionize Delta's 14,000 attendants. Two earlier attempts were voted down. Delta is unique among major U.S. carriers in having a largely non-union workforce. Only one major employee group, pilots, there's 7,000 of them, and about 200 dispatchers, are unionized. By contrast, Northwest is heavily union. The Airline Pilots Association, Association of Flight Attendants, International Association of Machinists, the Transport Workers Union, and still more unions are among the cooks in the kitchen. They see the chance to pick up 30,000 new members almost overnight when the merger happens. But what if it doesn't? What if shareholders or regulators shoot it down? Well, IAM spokesman Joe Tiberi is so bold as to say, quote, our goal is to organize the Delta workers regardless of whether there's a merger or not, unquote. A year ago, when Skybus Airlines said it would charge extra for the first checked bag, onboard soft drinks, and pretty much everything else, analysts said this was a really bad idea which would fail, and it did. But now, a year later, most of the legacy airlines look a lot like clones of Skybus, unbundling all aspects of a flight into an a la carte menu, which enrages passengers with unexpected extra fees. In a recent interview with CNBC, U.S. Airways CEO Doug Parker defended the practice as the new cost of doing business in an era of high oil prices. Quote, all airlines are raising fares, and you'll see that continue. We're trying to cover the cost of transportation. So the first thing we do is increase ticket prices to cover the cost and reduce the number of flights that are available, unquote. Regarding all the nickel and dime stuff, Parker pointed out customers don't grumble when they pay extra for food and drinks at a baseball game. He said that by cutting out optional niceties, the airline is better able to use available funds on improving other aspects of its service, including on-time performance and decreasing the number of mishandled bags. If only Skybus could have hung on a little bit longer. They'd look like pioneers about now. Alaska Airlines and Horizon Air say they're notifying about 1,500 customers of payment card misuse by a former call center employee. Affected customers who have addresses on file are getting letters by first-class mail this week. For everyone else, a notice with the details is being posted on the company's website. Quote, the former employee misused the payment card information provided by some customers to pay for reservation changes. Rather than process the payment on behalf of Alaska or Horizon, this individual diverted the payment to a personal account. The diversions occurred between August 2006 and June 2008. Customers are not being held responsible for any repayment. The company says it has notified authorities and is cooperating with their investigation. If you think you might be among the affected, check your credit card statements and read more in the reference guide available on Alaska's website. Still ahead, four men are accused of fixing prices for airline travel in the UK. Boeing says the world will need lots of new freighters. And a former Luftwaffe pilot's apology is snubbed in England. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design, maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Friday, August 8, 2008. I'm Paul Plack. According to a government statement, Britain's Office of Fair Trading charged four men this week in connection with a scheme to fix fuel surcharges between British Airways and Virgin Atlantic Airways. Martin George, Andrew Crawley, Alan Burnett, and Ian Burns were charged with cartel offenses in connection with the OFT's criminal investigation into price fixing of fuel surcharges for long-haul passenger flights. The men are charged with, quote, having dishonestly agreed with others to make or implement arrangements which directly or indirectly fix the price for the supply in the United Kingdom of passenger air transport services by British Airways and Virgin Atlantic Airways, unquote. The charges date to the period between July 2004 and April 2006, when the defendants were employed by British Airways. The men will appear at City of London Magistrates Court on September 24th and could face up to 5 years imprisonment and an unlimited fine. Boeing projects the global air cargo market will continue strong long-term growth. The company's current market outlook 2008 projects that the industry will grow at an average of 5.8% per year, and the world's freighter fleet will grow from 1,948 to 3,892 airplanes. Subtract out the 1,400 or so planes Boeing says will be retired from service during that same period, and you're left with a need for 3,358 new freighters between now and 2027. In each of the past 3 years, Boeing has booked record numbers of new production freighter orders, a total of 236 airplanes, dominated by the company's new 777F and 747-8F models. The Boeing World Air Cargo Forecast 2008-2009, which will be a more detailed study, is scheduled to be issued at the 2008 International Air Cargo Forum and Exposition in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, coming up in November. A former Luftwaffe pilot who returned to Britain this year to apologize for his World War II bombing raids escaped unharmed after his Mooney M20T lost its engine last week near Marshfield. BBC News reports 88-year-old Willie Schlutiker was flying to Bath on August 1st with friend Chris Kilminster when the Mooney's engine cut out soon after takeoff. For Schlutiker, it was the 10th time he's faced an emergency situation in 66 years of flying. But for Kilminster, who organized Schlutiker's trip, it was his first ever flight. Fortunately, Schlutiker's skills remained sharp, and he made a safe off-field landing. Kilminster, who's 61, marveled at Schlutiker's relaxed handling of the engine out. Quote, he just hugged me afterwards. That was Willie's 10th crash. He has had 9 in his flying career, but this was his first civilian one, unquote. I know. Someone needs to either tell Chris that an off-airport landing is not a crash, or get him a job in Senator Schumer's press office. During his service with the Luftwaffe, Schlutiker twice earned the Iron Cross for his 120 bombing raids over Britain, including 3 missions over Bath in 1942. He was flying his Mooney to the British city to apologize for the dreadful harm he did to Bath from his Dornier 217 E4. If Schlutiker is ready to bury the hatchet, Sadly, the descendants of his targets apparently are not. The BBC reports Schlüdecker's Mooney was later vandalized to the tune of over $58,000 in damage. And finally, 23-year-old Katie Hodgson and 24-year-old Darren McWalters are crazy about each other. Some would say they're just crazy. When the time came to plan their marriage, McWalters told Sky News TV, quote, "We are a bit crazy together, so we wanted something that suited," unquote. What they came up with will be hard to top. Katie and Darren had themselves strapped to the top of matching biplanes, talked the Reverend George Brigham into strapping himself to the top of a third one, and got married in formation while wing-walking 90 miles west of London, England. The Associated Press reports the red and white planes were flown at about 1,000 feet AGL by a team of stunt pilots called Team Gounod. The couple had to shout their vows to hear each other. Microphones allowed the bride, groom, and pastor to be heard by guests gathered at nearby Rendcomb Airfield. Katie's full bridal gown fluttered wildly, and smoke trails from the planes decorated the sky. Eventually, weather forced an early end to the stunt, but not before the knot was tied, and the couple both said they had a blast. As for who thought up the idea for the wing-walking wedding, Katie provided a hint. Quote, "I bring the adventurous side out of Darren. He used to be scared of heights," unquote. It's important to note that experts caution anyone hearing this story that what Katie and Darren did requires risk assessment, proper training, and careful preparations. They also urge caution when wing-walking. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Jason Blair, the new executive director of the National Association of Flight Instructors. We'll discuss Jason's vision for NAFI and why membership is a good value for CFIs. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Enjoy your weekend and have a clear and unlimited day.